Okay, I want to speak about the end of this coming week's Sedra, the mitzvahs of the Korban HaTamid, the daily sacrifice, and the Korbanos Musaf, the additional sacrifices that are brought on special occasions. Okay, the Korban HaTamid was one lamb in the morning and one lamb in the afternoon. The lamb in the morning was offered on the northwest corner of the Mizbeach, and in the evening on the northeast corner. And the Maldin says that in that way, in the morning their back was to the sun, and in the afternoon their back was to the sun, as a sign that they're not sun worshippers. That we worship the Ribbono Shel Olam, we worship one God, which is representative of the one lamb, and the Jewish people are one people, also compared to a lamb, and we don't worship any other powers in the world. The Shemesh is merely a servant, that's what the word Shemesh means, Shamus, and it's not a power that has to be served. The words Tminim Shnayim Leyom, that the two lambs should be blemish-free and two per day, the first letters of those words, Tminim Shnayim Leyom, is equals Tafshin Lamed. That's 730. That is the double the 365 days of the year, the 730. So it's a hint to the fact that there are two lambs every day, 365 days a year. Now, the only problem with that is that we have a lunar calendar, which has 354 days. We don't follow the solar calendar of 365 days. But based on what I just told you, that part of the reason that we make these sacrifices is to show that we don't worship the sun, so the sacrifices are on the solar calculation, not on the lunar calculation. Tafshin Lamed is 730. In Gematria. What? That 730 is... Oh, it's the first letters of Tminim Shnayim Layom. Shnei Kvasim Tminim Shnayim Layom. So, two per day, and they should be blemish-free. The first letters of those three words is Tashin Lamed. Okay, it says Tishmuru L'Hakriv Oso B'Moado. And we learn from that that... representatives of all the Jewish people have to be present when the sacrifice is brought, since it's being brought for the entire Jewish people, this daily sacrifice. So we have Kohanim, obviously, who are involved in the sacrifice, Levim, who are involved singing the songs from Tehillim that are sang when the sacrifices are brought, and there had to be a group of Yisraelim also standing there to represent the Yisraelim in Klal Yisrael. Now, the Sefer HaChinuch says, what is the idea behind bringing a daily sacrifice morning and evening, or morning and afternoon? That just like a human being has to eat morning and afternoon, right, to survive physically, so too he needs spiritual food. And making these daily sacrifices to God, morning and afternoon, represent our spiritual nourishment, our spiritual sustenance. Rav Arbanel says a different idea. He says that there were two occasions in history that were the prominent occasions of Jewish history. First was Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that happened in the afternoon, in the evening. So one sacrifice commemorates Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's in the evening, in the later afternoon, towards evening. And the other event was the giving of the Torah. That happened early in the morning. So we bring a sacrifice every morning to remember Matan Torah, and a sacrifice every afternoon, evening, right, still light, but it's the evening, to remember the Yetzias Mitzrayim. He says another idea is that the morning sacrifice is a thank you for getting up in the morning for our basic life. So we thank as a klal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every morning for giving us life. And the afternoon is the time when a person's involved in his parnasa and all of the extra things that a person has in his life. So the afternoon sacrifice is a communal sacrifice, thanking God for all the extras, all the parnasa that He gives us in addition to our basic life. The Zohar says that the daily communal morning sacrifice corresponds to Avraham Avinu, and it is a sacrifice that connects into Chesed, and the afternoon sacrifice is connected Yitzchak Avinu. It's a sacrifice that connects into Din, to judgment, justice. The first one is Chesed, is kindness, Avraham Avinu. The Sifsei Kohen says that the morning sacrifice and the afternoon sacrifice represent the fact that we have to control our Yetzer Hara both morning and evening. And therefore, since it is a hint to controlling the Yetzer Hara, it also is an atonement for sins. The Gemara says that no one ever remained with a sin in Yerushalayim, because the morning sacrifice atoned for the sins of the night, and the afternoon sacrifice atoned for the sins of the day. So a day didn't go by where you didn't have atonement for the sins, and therefore the Sfarim say that when the sacrifice was brought, people had to be mahara b'tshuva, because a sacrifice can't atone for anything unless you do tshuva. And therefore today, when we read, the person reads as part of davening the parsha of the daily sacrifice, he should be mahara b'tshuva when he does that. So the reading of the parsha will take the place of actually making the sacrifice and atone for one's sins. The Sfarim bring it down. The Maril Diskin says that the purpose of the morning sacrifice was as a prayer that all the sacrifices of the day, individual sacrifices, public sacrifices that would be brought that day, should be received favorably. And the afternoon communal sacrifice was a thank you to God for accepting all of the daily sacrifices favorably. And finally, the idea of bringing a sacrifice every day, afternoon and morning, shows that in Torah, consistency is a very important thing. It's not so much how much heroic efforts you do, but how consistent you are. And the fact that you bring one sacrifice every morning and one sacrifice every afternoon, not something special at special times, that's also important, but it's important to also be consistent. It's another lesson of the daily sacrifice. Okay, any questions on the daily sacrifice? If not, we'll go to the Musaf, the additional sacrifice that's brought on Shabbos. In addition, yeah? In the way that by learning it and reading it, it's as if we brought the sacrifice. Okay, to go into what sacrifices represent is not for that. Yeah. No, but learning about it, it says whoever learns the parashios of Karbanos, like he brought them. Okay, now on Shabbos, in addition to these two daily sacrifices, there was an additional, a musaf. Musaf means addition. There was an additional sacrifice that was brought special for Shabbos. The additional sacrifice was brought, obviously, after the Tamid Shel Shachar, after the morning daily sacrifice was brought, and before the afternoon daily sacrifice was brought, in between those two times. What was the additional sacrifice for Shabbos? Two lambs. Shnei kvasim b'nei shonava. In addition. In addition to the one lamb in the morning and the one lamb in the afternoon, there were two lambs extra brought as a special Shabbos sacrifice. In davening we say, Mus Karban Musaf Shabbos Karaui, as is befitting it. Shabbos has a dual nature to it. Shomer V'Zachar, is a dual idea of Shabbos. Shabbos is Lechem Mishnah, right? Everything about Shabbos, it says by Shabbos, most you must get a double death, right? Shabbos, you have a Neshama Yisera, a double Neshama. Everything about Shabbos is double. Now, I don't have time to go into in detail what that means, but in a nutshell, Shabbos has two aspects to it, a positive aspect and a negative aspect. On the one hand, Shabbos reminds us that God created the world and not us. And we are bound by God's framework. Shouldn't get carried away and think that we control the world. Shabbos, we are reminded that God created the world. Shabbos is also, that's a negative lesson. Don't think you are the boss here. On the other hand, Shabbos reminds us of the world to come, which is our part in perfecting this world, perfecting ourselves, and creating the world to come. So that's a positive lesson, that man, even though he's not the creator, but he's a partner to the creator. If he lives within the framework that God made, then he's a very important part of this creation, because he creates the world to come. So Shabbos has a negative lesson, a positive lesson, which go together. The negative is you are not the boss. You are only a worker here. You're only a created being. You're not the creator. That's negative. Right? It limits a person. On the other hand, if you are not the creator, but you're a created being, you were created to serve a very important part of perfecting the world. That's a positive lesson. And therefore, just like Lechem Mishnah, two meals Shabbos day, we have our own personal sustenance on Shabbos that's double, so we give spiritual sustenance in a double way, two krusim extra. Now, there is no sin offering on Shabbos. We'll see that the additional offerings on most of the Yomim Tovim include also a sin offering. Because Shabbos, sin is pretty much, Shabbos transcends sin. Sin means there's something imperfect. There's something missing. Shabbos represents shalom, peace. Shalom, Shabbat shalom, right? Shalom, Shabbos represents shlemus, perfection. There is nothing missing on Shabbos. So Shabbos takes away sin. So on Shabbos, there's no sin offering. Yeah. I hear. Okay, it's just, again, people still have sins after Shabbos. But the concept of Shabbos, to make a sacrifice of Shabbos, of a sin offering, that not. But if Yom Kippur comes on Shabbos, Yom Kippur supersedes Shabbos. You passed on Yom Kippur, even if it's Shabbos. So, yeah, 100%. Okay. The Chizkuni says that that's one of the reasons why every Shabbos we don't read a special maftar of the additional sacrifice of Shabbos like we do on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, we always read the portion in the Torah that deals with the additional sacrifices of that Yom Tov. Why on Shabbos don't we take out a second sacred Torah and every Shabbos read the parasha? And the fact that there's only two sentences and you can't read less than three is not a problem. We'd read one of them twice, like we do on Rosh Chodesh. But the idea is that it's necessary on every Yom Tov to read the parasha, because reading the parasha is like bringing the sacrifice. And since there was a sin offering, it's important to get that atonement. But on Shabbos, there is no sin offering, therefore it's not important to read the parasha. And therefore the Rosh says, that's hinted to in the Seder itself. It says, Eilam Adei Hashem Asher Tikru. These are the holidays which you should call, but it also means to read. So there's a hint that on the holidays we read these parashios, but not on Shabbos, only on Moadim, only on the holidays. Another interesting difference about the way the Torah describes the sacrifices of Shabbos, as opposed to the sacrifices of all the other Yomim Tovim, is it doesn't say, Va'asisem, you should do, or you should sacrifice. It just says, V'yom HaShabbos, snake fussing. On Shabbos, two lambs. It doesn't say, sacrifice two lambs, make two lambs, or whatever, like it says by the other Yom Tovim. Why? Because since Shabbos, this would be normally prohibited, because sacrificing an animal, slaughtering it, burning it, is also on Shabbos. Even though the Torah said you should do it on Shabbos, so it's okay to do, the Torah didn't want to describe it in a way that would be sacrilegious to Shabbos, as if, you know, v'machal Shabbos. So it said it in a hidden way, where it doesn't say openly, make the sacrifice, sacrifice the sacrifice, which involves malacha, just on Shabbos, there are two lambs. Right, so it leaves it in a very veiled way, not to be open about the fact that you're doing something that normally would be prohibited on Shabbos to make these sacrifices. Okay, next, Rosh Chodesh. Every new moon, beginning of the month, we also bring a special additional sacrifice. And where these days coincided, for instance, where Rosh Chodesh was also Shabbos, you'd bring the additional sacrifice for Shabbos, in addition, the additional sacrifice for Rosh Chodesh. And so to where other Rosh Hashanah is Rosh Chodesh. So you bring Rosh Chodesh sacrifice, Rosh Hashanah sacrifice, and if it falls on Shabbos, a Shabbos sacrifice. Sometimes you're bringing tremendous amount of sacrifices because each day adds a little bit more. Now Rosh Chodesh, the Chinuch says, what's special about Rosh Chodesh? Why do we bring special sacrifice on Rosh Chodesh? Because Rosh Chodesh represents the changes in time. Many changes occur because of the new month in nature. Many changes in nature are controlled by the moon and its cycles, amongst them the tides, right, and other changes, okay? Women, according to some, therefore have a greater connection to Rosh Chodesh because their body cycles follow a cycle of the month, which is dependent on the moon. So they have a greater connection, naturally, to the moon and to, what's it called, to Rosh Chodesh. Now, the Sfarim bring down that every Rosh Chodesh should have been a Yontif, a regular, full-fledged Yontif. There were three Yomim Tovim, right, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. Those corresponded to the Avos, the three Avos. There should have been another 12 Yomim Tovim connected to Shlokim. But we lost them because of the Chet HaEgel. When we served the golden calf, we lost those Yomim Tovim. Women who didn't serve the golden calf preserved Rosh Chodesh as a semi-yontif, as a remembrance that they didn't serve the golden calf. That's why women have a greater observance of Rosh Chodesh than men do. Now, what is the sacrifice on Rosh Chodesh? The Torah says like this: "Uvarat shechashechem takrivu ola l'Hashem." On Rosh Chodesh, you bring a burnt offering, which is parin b'nei bakar shnayim. You bring two bulls, the ayil echad, and one ram, and kvasim b'nei shana shivat minim, and 14 lambs, 7 lambs. 7 lambs, 2 bulls, and 1 ram. Okay, in a few seconds I'll describe what these represent. Rav Shamshon Frohl Hirsch explains the following. Whenever we bring a bull as a sacrifice, the bull represents offering to God your being a worker in His field. God's field is the earth, the universe, and we are like bulls that are work animals in cultivating that field. We are God's workers in cultivating the world. That is, and I bring a bull to represent that. Why two bulls? Well, see, this is most of the Yomim Tovim, this is the set sacrifice. Why two bulls? Because it represents the fact that every individual is an individual worker in God's field. We bring one, so that would represent the Jewish people as a whole, and me only as a part of the community. But if I bring two, then it represents each individual separately. So we bring these sacrifices to represent that every individual Jew is a worker in developing and cultivating God's world. Okay. Then, and an Ola, and Ola is a, what's it called, represents Aliyah. that you have to constantly, since you are a worker in cultivating God's field, God's world, you have to constantly strive for greater and greater perfection. Go up, always Ola, always going higher and higher. The aisle, says Rabbi Hirsch, the ram, means that you are a special worker. Okay? That Klal Yisrael has special qualities to be the leaders of the flock. That's a ram. The ram is the leader of the flock. So we direct our potential to be leaders towards God. And that's something that all the Jewish people share in common, that we are the leaders of the world. So we bring one ram to represent that collective idea that the Jewish people are the leaders of the world. The seven kvasim, the seven lambs, right, represent the fact that we're part of God's flock. And we have to serve Him with all of the things that He provides for us. That's just it's not that we're cultivating God's world, it's not that we're leading in God's world, but we are also part of God's flock, who He is the shepherd, and He provides us with various things that we should be able to exist, like a shepherd provides his sheep, and in that respect, we have to, what's it called, serve Him with all the things that God provides as our shepherd. And the reason for seven is because that which God provides us is represented by 7 days. All 7 days are the perfection of all the things that God provides us with. That is how Rabbi Hirsch explains these sacrifices, the olas, the olas of two paring, two bulls, one ram, seven lambs. Rabbeinu Bachya, based on Midrashim, says a different idea. Says the bulls represent Avram Avinu. Par, that's Avram. And why two? Because Avram had two parts to his life. Once when he was Avram, till he was 100, or was 99, and when after he became Avraham. So you have two bulls, one representing Avram's first part of his life and the second part of his life. The aisle represents Yitzchak, who the aisle, the ram, was sacrificed in place of Yitzchak. And the kvasim, the lambs, represent Yaakov Avinu. Why seven? Because Yaakov Avinu was the perfection of the avos, and his image, his likeness, is engraved in God's throne, which is above the seven heavens. So you bring seven lambs to represent Yaakov Avinu, whose likeness is engraved in the throne above the seven heavens. What does it mean? It means that the throne of God is His Hashgacha, His divine providence. And God guides the world through the Jewish people. And Yaakov Avinu is the symbol of all Jewry. So His likeness is in that throne. And it's above the seven heavens, meaning that's where the control of everything comes from. Beyond everything else, all the other powers that exist, God is the one who makes everything move and controls everything. So He's beyond all the powers in the world. And that's where the Jewish people's likeness is, Yaakov Avinu. Now, in addition, we bring a goat as a sin offering. The goat, Rabbi Hirsch says, represents something stubborn. Stubborn as a goat. Right? So, even though stubborn as a mule too, but goats are also stubborn and bold. And therefore, in order to avoid sin and to atone sin, you have to be stubborn to fight the Yetzer Hara. Rabbeinu Bachya says, the other sacrifices represented the three avos. This one is an atonement for the sale of Yosef. Because when they sold Yosef, they slaughtered a goat and took its blood and dipped his clothing in the blood to let Yaakov Avinu think that he was mauled by a wild animal. Now, in addition to these, so those are the sacrifices that are brought on Rosh Chodesh. Two bulls, one ram, seven lambs as an olah, a goat as a sin offering, and then there was other things brought. A mincha, a meal offering, made of flour, which Rabbi Hirsch says represents a person's basic sustenance, bread. It also included oil, which represents the comforts of life. It included levona, frankincense, which represents satisfaction in life, and wine, which represents joy in life. And we take all those components of life that God provides, the basic sustenance, comforts, satisfaction, and joy, and we direct them towards God. That's the sacrifice. What? Flour, oil, frankincense, and wine. And there's a hint, and joy. Flour was a sustenance, major sustenance a person has. Basics. The oil was comforts. Satisfaction, and wine was joy. Okay. Now, there's amounts that are brought. For the bull, you bring a half a hin. A half a hin is 6 lug of what's it called, of oil. And that hints to Avraham Avinu. Because Avraham Avinu, at Kechom Hayom, at the 6th hour of the day, is when he went to bring in his guests, which is what the Torah gives us as the epitome of Avraham Avinu. The isle, the ram, which corresponds to Yitzchak, you brought a third of a hin. That's 4 lug. Because Yitzchak Avinu was sacrificed in the 4th hour of the day. And for the kevesh, which corresponds to Yaakov, is a quarter of a hin, which is 3 lugim. 3 lugim are 18 beitzim. Okay? In a lug, what's it called? There are, in every lug, there are 6 beitzim, 6 egg volumes, and 3 lugim, therefore, is 18, and Yaakov Avinu was the first one to daven the 18 brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. So it hints to Yaakov Avinu. Now, on Rosh Chodesh, there is a special pasuk that says, you bring a sacrifice l'Hashem, for God, a sin offering for God. Why does God have to bring a sin offering? So the Gemara says it's a sin offering for God that he made the moon smaller. Originally the moon and the sun were equal, and God made the moon smaller, and that we have to bring an atonement for God for making the moon smaller. What does that mean? So one idea is, besides this drasha, what's a simple meaning? A sin offering to God, that people used to worship the sun and the moon. So on Rosh Chodesh, not to make a mistake that we're worshiping the moon, we bring a sin offering to God, specifically to show that we don't worship the moon. And it's specific on Rosh Chodesh that we have to show that we don't worship the sun and the moon, because if the sun and the moon would have been equal size, there would be no question that they're not gods, because you can't have two gods of equal size. You can't both be gods. But once the moon is smaller and subservient to the sun, there's a place to think that the sun is a god and the moon is its servant. So in order not to make that mistake, we bring the sacrifice, the Torah says, directed to God purposefully, and don't think that you're bringing it to the moon or the sun. What is, however, the deeper meaning of this, that it's atonement for God for making the... So the Rashba says an interesting idea. He says that we see from this that God created the world the way he wanted to. And even though the moon may have had a complaint or whatever, tough luck. Like, God sets the boundaries, whether you like it or not. On the other hand, God is fair. And he tries to appease things, not to make jealousy, not to make people get hurt. And therefore, if he had to make the moon smaller for whatever reason, he tried to appease the moon by making the Jewish people bring a sacrifice on Rosh Chodesh, so the moon got some compensation. Okay, now on the 3 Cholos Regalim, Sukkos, Pesach and Shavuos. On Pesach and Shavuos, we brought the exact same sacrifices that we brought on Rosh Chodesh. Okay? On Sukkot, we'll see, we brought almost double that amount of sacrifices. Why is Sukkot so much extra? So the simple idea is that the Chizkuni says, because Sukkot has extra simcha. It has the extra gemulav, right? And it has also the fact that it's the harvest festival, so it's extra simcha. Has an extra simcha, you have to bring more sacrifices. And also, Sukkot, we bring sacrifices to protect the entire world, not just the Jewish people, which we'll see more clearly in a second. Now, so on Shavuos and Pesach, we bring the same sacrifices that we bring on Rosh Chodesh, and has the same idea behind it, right? We are, as individuals, workers in God's field, cultivating the world. We are leaders, and we have to serve God with all the things as a shepherd that He gives us. That's the meaning of the regular sacrifices. Now, there's a little bit differences, though. On Shavuos, it doesn't say the word chatas. You bring the sin offering, but it doesn't call it a chatas. It doesn't call it a sin offering. Because Torah is also atones. So Torah has this power of atonement, so it doesn't mention chet, even though you do bring a sin offering. On Rosh Hashanah, we bring, and Rosh Hashanah and Kippur is different. Rosh Hashanah is just, and Shemini Atzeres. There's only one bull. One bull, one ram, seven. So what's the difference? On Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we don't represent ourselves as individuals. We said that the two bulls represent the fact that every individual Jew is a worker in God's field. But Rosh Hashanah, we have to come as a tzibur, as a cloud. You can't come as individuals because we're being judged, and as an individual, nobody could survive judgment. So you want to be part of the cloud. So on Rosh Hashanah, we represent our being workers in God's field as part of the tzibur, one part, which represents the collective Klal Yisrael. Same thing on Yom Kippur, and the same thing on Shemini Atzeres, which represents the Jewish people as opposed to the nations of the world. Shemini Atzeres is God's party with us alone, rather than celebrating together with the rest of the world. So on those days, we bring only one bull, not two bulls, to represent the collective, not the individual. And also on Rosh Hashanah, it doesn't say the karavtem, you should sacrifice a burnt offering, but vasisem, you should make. Why? Because on Rosh Hashanah, it's as if you made yourself a sacrifice. Or it's as if you're making yourself new. It's a new year, you're renewing yourself. You're making yourself. Both on Yom Kippur and on Shavuos, it changes the terminology. On all the other Yom Tov, it says this seir, and a goat for a sin offering. On Shavuos and Yom Kippur, it just says seir, without the vav, to make them similar. What's similar between Yom Kippur and Shavuos? We got the Torah on both of those occasions. We got the Torah on Shavuos, and we got the Torah second time around on Yom Kippur, the Luchos, the second Luchos. And it also doesn't say on Yom Kippur to atone, because Yom Kippur itself atones. This sacrifice, even though it's a sin offering, but the main atonement of Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur itself. Okay, now let's speak about Sukkot, and that will complete. Sukkot, we bring 13 bulls the first day, 12 the second day, 11 the third day, all the way down to 7 on the seventh day. And we bring 2 rams and 14, what's it called, sheep. 14 lambs. Now, on the surface, you can see that it's like a doubling of the original sacrifice that you bring on a regular Yom Tov. Regular Yom Tov is 2 bulls, 1 ram, 7 lambs. Here, 2 rams, 14 lambs. Mamish double. The 13 is not double, right? But he says what it is 2 groups. There's a group of 7 bulls and a group of 6 bulls. 7 and 6, 13. And he explains it like this. On Sukkot, we're involved with the whole world. Sukkot is a reminder of the time the world will reach its completion, and even the nations of the world will serve God. So on Sukkot we bring sacrifices, 70 bulls, as a protection for the nations of the world, because they also have a part in service of God. Right? So we bring totally 70, because we bring 13 plus 12 plus 11 plus 10 plus 9 plus 8 plus 7 is 70. So over the 7 days of Sukkot, we bring 70 bulls, but we bring them 13, 12, 11 in descending order. And that's a sign that the nations of the world are decreasing. Now that doesn't mean they're decreasing, that we're cursing them that they should decrease. What it means is all the multitude of different nations was only a result of Migdal Bavel, because the Goyim couldn't get together for anything good, so God said better they shouldn't get together for bad. So he separated them. But as Mashiach comes closer, the nations of the world will unite, because ultimately they'll unite in service of God under us. So there'll be only one united nation. So they go, they're decreasing towards Mashiach when there'll be one. What? Right. Sukkot is representative of that final harachamanu yokim lanu sukkas david anu falas. So, with Psalm 24 says the following. Since Sukkot represents the dual nature of service to God, Yidden and Goyim, but Jews are seven bulls. We have Shabbos. We're a more spiritual service of God. The nations of the world serve God more physically, the physical world, this world. We serve God more for the next world. So we're seven, they're six. As the world reaches its completion, he says, the difference between the seven and the six go down. Because the next phase, 12, is already six and six. Until there's only seven left, and everybody like is together. But still, there's still two rams, because we are leaders of the world, they're leaders of the world, but totally different kind of leaders. We have the things that God provides us with to serve him, seven lambs, they are also there, but they're different. So those remain separate. Seven lambs, Goyim, Yidden, different. Two rams, we're leaders, they're leaders, different. But when it comes to the bull of being a worker in God's world, there the differences between the Jewish people and the non-Jewish world will get less and less as Mashiach comes closer, until they mesh. But in exactly how we work in that world, Jews are different still, Goyim are different even when Mashiach comes. That, he says, is the symbolism. Now, the 70 bulls represent the 70 nations of the world. There's also 98 lambs. Hold on one second. 14 every day, 7 days is 98. Those 98 lambs atone for the 98 klolos, the curses that we got, right? There are 98 curses. In Parshas Kisavo, those 98 lambs atone for those 98 curses. And it's interesting, and we'll end with this, and then I'll take a question. On some of the days, it says, Seir Izim, by Sukkot, you should also bring a goat from Seir Izim, right? As a sacrifice, a sin offering, right? There was also a sin offering, a Seir Izim. And on some days it just says Seir, not Seir Izim, just a Seir. Okay, they're the same animal, they're just referred to different ways. So the Vilna Gaon says a tremendous thing. He says like this, the 70 nations are divided equally between Yishmael and Esav. 35 are aligned with Esav, 35 aligned with Yishmael. Yishmael was called an Aes, a goat. Esav is called a Seir. So when it says Seir Izim, it refers to Yishmael. When it says just Seir, it refers to Esav. Now let's see. On day one, it says Seir Izim. It says there were 13 bulls brought on day one. Okay, so the 13 bulls align with Yishmael. 13. Second day, same thing. It says Seir Izim. 12 more bulls align with Yishmael. Okay, altogether so far 25. If on day three, when you bring 11, It would also align with Yishmael, be too many, be 36 already. And Yishmael only has 35. So day 3, it doesn't say Seir Yizim, it says Seir. Those 11 align with Esav. The next day is the fourth day, there are 10. Those align again with Yishmael to make 35. And all the rest of the days align with Esav, and now there's 35 on both sides. So the days that it says Seir Yizim align with Yishmael, the days that it says Seir align with Esav, and it works out that there's exactly 35 and 35 on each side. But those are the basic meaning, some of the meanings at least, of the daily sacrifices and the additional sacrifices of all the Yomim Tovim and what's it called in Rosh Chodesh. Yes?
What does it mean, Seir Yizim?
Seir Yizim means a hairy goat. I guess that's the... let's see what he says. Seir Yizim would be... Seir Yizim, he-goat. And how does he say Seir? Let's see. The third day is where it's just a Seir. And he also says a he-goat. Seir Yizim, Seir and Yizim are the same thing. But Seir has a connotation of being hairy, and Eaz is a goat. So a Seir Yizim is a hairy goat, and a Seir is a regular hairy goat, not mentioned, but that's the same connotation. Okay? Basically, according to the translation here, there's no difference at all, right? Just sometimes a goat is called a Seir Yizim, and sometimes it's just called Yizim. And sometimes it's called not easy, sometimes it's called Seir. Sometimes it's called just the hairy animal, which means a goat, or sometimes it's called the Seir Yizim, hairy goat, where it's specified. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Yeah. Right. But they didn't have an extra, there was no sacrifices in Chutz La'aretz. Sacrifice only when there was a Beis HaMikdash and in Eretz Yisrael. So, right, it's only 2 days because we're not sure which day is Yom Tov, right? They didn't know which day was Rosh Chodesh. So they had to keep 2 days because maybe there was no such thing that in Chutz La'aretz is 2 days Yom Tov. There's only 1 day, but they weren't sure which day. So they had to keep 2 just in case. So if the first day is Yom Tov, the second day isn't. And if the second day is Yom Tov, the first day wasn't. So it's really only 1 day, just they're not sure which of the 2 days was the actual day, right?
Right. Same carbon
again, because maybe that's the day, right? Exactly, maybe that's the day.